Hi, everyone. Yes, I again get the privilege of welcoming our guest speaker for today. Just to put a little bit in context, whether if you're newer with us, or you haven't been with us over the last month, and this is your first go round with Dr. Carl, I just want to like place a little bit of context of what we've been doing, because it's been really, really impactful and helpful for me and for a lot of people as I'm getting to hear stories. I even heard a story as recently as Friday about just how impactful this what we're learning about this approach to prayer, positive memory prayer, or what's called the Emmanuel approach from Dr. Carl. I had a fun conversation earlier this week with Carl about what is it exactly that we're working on and learning in terms of our prayer life. We talked about wanting to improve people's prayer life, and that's why we decided to take this experiment and do things that are a little bit more interactive on Sundays together for four whole Sundays. And we just got the most amazing analogy came up where we talked about like, so if prayer is about communicating with God, like in any relationship with my wife or with anybody, communication is like the linchpin, right? Like you got to be able to communicate. And so, you know, you communicate in very different ways. Like, and what we talked about is like generally when we are taught prayer, and what we pick up from, if we are a churchgoer, what we've picked up from churches, or what we pick up just from wider culture about, like, what is prayer? We've generally been taught to text message God. That was the image we were working with. It's like, you know, like, and text messages is a really helpful form of communication. Like, Kezi, you know, my wife, can you don't forget to pick up milk on your way home. It's great. That's super helpful. I don't, you know, like, if we didn't have that, that's a bummer. Like, before cell phones were around, that was a bummer for me. I would just have to live without milk. How terrible. And so the text message is super helpful. But generally, when we think about prayer and the way that most of us are taught to pray, it's like this one-sided, we don't actually get any immediate feedback. It's just like, fire off the text message. Like, Jesus, would you, you know, be with me because I have to respond to that email that triggered me. And also, Jesus, don't forget to pick up milk. You know, like, we just do that. And we don't actually look for any feedback. We're not expecting any feedback. It's just like you fire it off. And sometimes, actually, prayer that way is really great. But what we've been learning about with the approach that Dr. Carl has been leaning us into is a type of prayer that encourages us to look for immediate feedback. Look for nonverbal feedback from Jesus. Now look for how somebody is positioned. Like when I talk with my wife and we're just sitting together and I see how her face responds to what I say, that's so much more than just a text message. And there's so much more that I can build relationally with her. That's kind of what we're doing with God. And so if you like that analogy, I hope you do because it really helped me. That's kind of what we're doing here. And so our guide on this, if you've been with us, you've heard me say this before, but he's basically somebody who can blend expertise in prayer and expertise in brain science. He is a practicing counselor, an accoladed doctor. You do have to call him doctor. In fact, I once didn't call him doctor, and he slapped me. No, I'm just kidding. That was like the last thing Carl would do. No, but he's a brilliant guy and also somebody who has spent lots of time helping people think about prayer in church settings. His wife is a lead pastor of a Mennonite church in Evanston, and they have become great friends and wonderful teachers to us and to me in particular. So I'm thrilled once again to welcome up Dr. Carl Lehman. Let's give him a hand.
All right. Thank you, Vince. See if I can live up to that. Good hype. All right. For a second, I thought I left my page of notes at home. Just hiding. Thank you. So I'll do a two-minute summary of, like, what we have done and why it makes sense in your brain. First is, especially for those of you who haven't been here for one of the previous weeks, God built a part of our brains to do relationship. I call those relational circuits. That's their job. It's kind of the hardware that you actually have in your brain to run relationships. And when those circuits are on, relationships kind of just flow so naturally you don't even think about it. And when they're off, relationships don't go so well. You feel defensive, you feel irritable. There's a whole list of things that don't work well. And the cool thing is there are some very simple ways to make sure that that relational part of your brain is on. And one of the simplest is take a few minutes to think about and connect with a positive memory and then kind of name and even say out loud some specific things that you particularly appreciate. To think about a positive memory and deliberately stir up appreciation, that will turn on the part of your brain that does relationships, and it will be easier to connect with God, well, other people, but for the prayer piece, that part of your brain also seems to run the relationship with God. So you, positive memory, appreciation, turn that part of your brain on, it's easier to connect with God. Applied brain science. So next piece, relationships are memory mapped. For those of you who have heard this before, hopefully we're kind of reminding it the third time around, it'll be sinking in more deeply. But that's, if you think about it for a minute, it just makes sense. Anybody you have a relationship with, that relationship is carried in your memories for being with that person. You'll remember, oh, the first time I met my wife, you can remember dating, you can remember courtship, you can remember, you know, all the adventures around the wedding, you can remember your honeymoon, you can remember working in your garden together, you can remember fixing up your first apartment together. My relationship with my wife is carried in a whole bunch of memories of interacting with her. The cool part about that is if you deliberately think about and connect with those positive memories of any particular person you're with, that will actually kind of activate and strengthen your relationship with that person, which is a kind of a tip. The implications there for your friends and your family and your marriages is just, if you think about that for 1 minute, they're obvious, huge asset, you get a freebie there. With God, though, if you have memories of positive experiences with God, if you take a couple minutes to think about those memories, connect with them, talk about them, stir them up, you will kind of activate and refresh the memories that carry your relationship with God. It makes it very easy to take the next step right here this morning and connect with him right now. Last, number three, our brains are designed to work best in community. This is an interesting feature. I did a whole presentation on this. I will restrain myself. It's hard, but I will. Because there's like a whole hour worth of material, just the summary version of all the ways God has designed us to work best in community. And one of the real neurological ones is that if I interact with a person, like if I interact with your face, there's a part of my brain that does that. There's a whole part of your brain whose job it is to notice your expression, to see how you're smiling, you're angry, you're happier. There's all this nonverbal stuff that's huge, hugely important for communication. And if you interact with somebody else's face, it pulls whatever you're doing through that part of your brain. If you get words for something, you have to turn on your language. The front of your left side has to come on to be able to do that. So if I'm having some kind of a prayer experience, I notice what's in my awareness, I get words for it, and I share them with you, that simple little process pulls the content through the parts of my brain, and what's kind of just coincidence, that part of your brain that does faces and words, those two parts of your brain also help you to feel that something is important and recognize how it fits into your life. And so it's kind of the way things work in the brain. If I do this activity to bring a part of my brain on, well, anything else that part of my brain does comes on at the same time because they just live in the same house. So if you get language and share it with a person, that will help you feel that it's important and recognize what it means. And so we've been applying those bits of brain science to get an interactive connection with Jesus. And here's how it looks. So we make little groups of three, and then you take turns thinking about and then describing briefly a positive memory. If it's a God memory, that's ideal for this piece. Turns your brain relational circuits on. If it's a God memory, it specifically strengthens that particular relationship. And then you invite, okay, Jesus, if you're in a God memory, you say, can you help me experience your presence in this memory, not just as a photo album, but as a living interactive presence? And then you notice whatever comes into your awareness, turn to the other two people in your little group, and you just describe it to them. And that little exercise applies those three pieces of brain science. And many people experience that they sense in some way or another the living interactive presence of Jesus. So that's what we've been doing. And we're going to do this morning, we're going to do that same kind of the same basic package, but the last piece we're going to say, So Jesus, I welcome your presence. Help me to perceive your presence right here in the room with me. It's just a variation, which is just kind of fun. It's an interesting story about how we stumbled onto that working. But that's the little twist we're going to do this morning, and we're going to get to that in a couple minutes. I think I'm supposed to take I have a few minutes here to do question and answer. There are a couple. So we gathered a couple questions over the last few weeks. I'm going to just take like 1 minute each to touch on them right now. And then there's like a lunch at Pastor Vince and Kezia's house after at 12:30 to have more question and answer time. But you're going to get the hors d'oeuvre or the appetizer right now. Okay. So one question, big question, common question. Can you do this by yourself? Like we're talking about, your brain's designed to work best in community. If you interact with another face, that's ideal. Yes, you can do it by yourself. It just doesn't work as well. And I've done this now thousands and thousands of times in many different settings, and pretty much everybody, if they try it for a while, agrees that if you do it with another person, and let's say it's a 7, if you just do it on your own, it might be a 3. Now, I think it's still one of the best tools for prayer doing it by yourself for your quiet time, your prayer time is a fantastic resource, but there's two things I want to name. One is, sometimes when you're just starting, it's easier to spot a 7 than it is to spot a 3. And so I really encourage people, learn about this in the ideal context. Learn about this and try it in a group or with a partner, and you have a much better chance of saying, oh my goodness, it works. This is the craziest thing. I thought this guy was crazy, but I actually sense the living presence of Jesus here with me, and I can sort of sense what he's, I have a question or I say something and I kind of feel a response. You have a much better chance of that working if you cooperate with the way your brain is designed and do it with another person. And what I tell people or invite people to do is learn to do it that way, kind of get your feet on the ground, get the training wheels off, I actually know how to do this. And then you can experiment with doing it on your own, wherever that fits into your life. So that's my recommendation for that piece. The second point is, we haven't gotten to this. In our our super condensed, smallest possible container you can possibly do this in Sunday morning deal we've been doing, a component of this whole picture, if you have more time, is you can do healing work for traumatic memories with this way to pray. Once you get the connection with Jesus, you say, okay, Jesus, what about that car accident, you know, where my brother died, and I've had panic attacks when I try to drive ever since then. You can go work on traumatic memories, and Jesus, his living interactive presence there, he's a fantastic therapist. And so it's a huge tool. It's the best tool. It's my number one tool as a psychiatrist for working with traumatic memories. And people who know that piece ask the same question, can I do that on my own? The answer again is yes, but it doesn't work as well. And there's one big risk. If you get stuck in a traumatic memory and you're all by yourself, to varying degrees, you have a bad day. From a small bad day to a horrible bad day. If you have somebody with you, they can help you go back to your positive memory. I mean, if you have somebody with you, there's some things they can do to just help you not get stuck in a bad place. So it works better. Learn it the best way. And once you got your training wheels off, you can experiment with doing it with yourself. And if you do work with painful memories, it's especially a good idea to learn first with somebody else. All right. Can you do it with yourself? Second question. When we do the piece where Jesus shows up, are we just using our imagination to kind of create, to proactively construct that experience, that phenomena, or not? Or not? You use your imagination to reconstruct the memory. Okay, I'm remembering being on the beach with the swallows. Your imagination can generate, like, I'm pretending to be, you know, in some other fantasy world with giants and elves, whatever. But your imagination also works to reconstruct a memory that you're reconnecting with. You know, you close your eyes and you kind of imagine, oh yeah, that's right, I remember what that was like. I can kind of picture the ocean. It was really calm. It was beautiful. Sun coming up. You use your imagination to reconnect with your memory. But when you get to the piece where you say, okay, Jesus, I welcome your presence, help me to perceive your presence, what you're doing is observing. You just notice what happens. It's not your job to generate it, to make it happen, to construct it. And a little analogy here is, like, if I interact with Vince, there's two options. I can actually interact with the living Vince who's here, and he waved it back at me. I didn't know he was going to do that. That was a surprise, because he's actually somebody else, not just me, right? And I don't know what he's going to do. I mean, I say, hey, Vince, you know, what are we having for lunch? I have no idea what he's going to tell me, because I haven't heard that piece yet. Now, if I'm just imagining Vince, then it's like I have a hand puppet, and I know what he's going to do. Hey, Vince, can I have $1,000? Sure, Carl, that'd be a fine. And well, sometimes your imaginary person is more cooperative than the real one. The crazy thing about Jesus is the real Jesus is actually better than your imaginary Jesus, because your imaginary Jesus can be comforting and say some nice words. He can quote scripture. But the real Jesus can actually like tell you new stuff. He can heal you. It can transform your life. That's the real short summary. Every question we touch on is like there's a whole chapter in the book that gives examples and explains more stuff and pretty much will convince you that I'm right. Well, it's just I spent like literally 10,000 hours over like 10 years putting this together. And it's really the important points I try to make. I spent a lot of time chewing on those babies and tried to not like lead people into the woods. So hopefully I'm right about some of these really important pieces. And most people, when they read like the 40-page explanation with the brain science and the references and the examples and the case studies, they end up saying, I think you're right. Okay, so that's the amplified version. Third piece, what about people who feel like I don't have any positive memories? Now, the good news is that most of the folks, when I've been seeing you do this exercise the last three times, I see smiles. That usually tells me, hey, that person's having a positive memory, they're connecting with it, they're feeling good. A part of the fallen world is there's folks who have really bleak lives. There's people who are depressed at the moment. When you're depressed, the circuits that carry positive memories are kind of mostly asleep. It's hard to find them, for example. There's also just people who've had really, really tough lives, and there are not as many big, nice, positive memories. So I'll touch on that for 45 seconds. One is, it doesn't have to be a huge, glorious, you know, 200,000 tree swallows migrating down the East Coast, National Geographic wildlife once-in-a-lifetime moment. And that's nice. But it can be, I'm eating a piece of Chicago deep dish pizza. That's actually pretty good, too. It's not quite the swallows on the beach, but it's halfway there. Or chocolate silk pie, if you've ever had that. It's like, if you actually take a little time to connect with it, chocolate silk pie, Chicago deep dish pizza, my favorite Christmas present when I was 8 years old, this one afternoon that my best friend and I in third grade, we built this little fort. It was so much fun. And so far, I have yet to find a single person, even the ones who are fairly depressed, even the ones who say, like, I never had any good memories, if I help them look for small things. Nobody gets to be 20 years old without any positive experience in their life. It just doesn't happen. I can wrestle with you on that if you don't believe me there. So one is you can find small things, pizza, chocolate silk pie, favorite Christmas present. I have notes. That's right. I was thinking, what were my other points? They're written down. Another thing is, folks with lots of rough stuff in their lives, they'll have a positive memory, but it'll be right next to one that's not so positive. I remember my wonderful best friend in second grade. Oh, that's right. He left the next year, broke my heart. I remember this wonderful dog I had. It was my birthday present when I was 7 years old. I was so excited. Oh, that's right. He got ran over by a car, you know, 3 weeks later. Now, you can choose to do the, for this exercise, you can say, I'm not dismissing or minimizing or invalidating all the painful parts of my story. This isn't about, let's just pretend everything's good. Fully acknowledge there's lots of rough stuff. That's what I do every day as a psychiatrist. I help people heal those bad pieces. But you can. I think it's legitimate, it's authentic to say, for this exercise, I'm going to choose to focus on these positive pieces to get my relational circuits on and connect with God. And we'll make space some other place to work on the painful memories. And that's a brain skill you can learn, like meditation. You can learn to focus on anything. And you can learn to focus on, let's just focus on the positive piece for right now. The expanded answer will be at the Q&A lunch if there's people who have it. But there's some of the really such cool, fun story example, case study things. I just don't have time. You'll have to come to the lunch. There's a really fantastic story, but I don't have time to share it. So is this those are the three appetizer question and answer pieces.
Great. Thank you so much, Carl. Yeah. So we're going to go into some experimental time. What's up? Okay. No, you're golden. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to ignore the 7 and pretend it says 5. And so when it says 2, that means 0. Carl will give you a heads up on how that is. So what we're going to do now is we're going to break into groups of 3. And what we're going to encourage you to do is to try this process, which is to recount a positive memory, start describing that positive memory out loud to somebody else, the other people in your group, and then Carl will coach you at some point as you're describing, oh, I remember when the French silk and like I hit that little piece of whipped cream and it was on my tongue, it was so good. And then he's gonna say, I saw some people grossed out by that description. Somebody was like, Carl will coach you to say, okay, Jesus, help me perceive your interactive presence here. And then to say, what do you notice? Maybe you notice Jesus has his own pie next to you, or maybe you notice just a sense of like, I'm so happy you're enjoying that. I don't know, just, there is no wrong or right. You're just gonna describe what that is. And then we're gonna say, well, help me perceive you here right now, not just in the memory, is the last piece we're gonna do here. As we are always saying, is full permission to engage or not engage in this. If you would like to take this, Vince is going to play some slow jams for us in the background. And if you would like to just take this as a space to contemplate the Eagles losing or take a moment just to be quiet, how often does somebody say that? Hey, take the next 15 minutes to be quiet. You can do that. But we encourage you to try this if you seem up for it. And you're going to need a group of 3, and then we're going to go around and do that. So.